Yeah, of course.
Okay, so everything in the dense physical is at less than the speed of light. So does all of that abide by the laws of Newtonian physics?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yep.
And then once you get into the etheric, then it's more the quantum.
Right.
Is everything up at that following those same laws, or does the astral have different laws, the mental have different laws?
They probably do. I don't know if I could go into that much. But just understanding this division here, this is indestructible reality.
Okay.
This is destructible. This is governed by entropy. Something dies, it immediately begins to decay. Once the soul leaves, that's a cohering force. That's what holds everything together. Once that leaves, within hours, the physical starts to decay and break down. Down here, it's electromagnetic. It's governed by those laws. Above this is considered magnetoelectric. But if we keep things in mind, that energy cannot be created or destroyed, it only changes form. When this slows down, it moves into physical reality. And when this breaks down, decays, changes, the energy moves back out. So it's constantly moving back and forth. So, let's pass these out. This will be a little bit different description here. Well, that just gets into a little bit more of the details. Below this line down here, you have positive space-time. I mean, we have the laws of space and time that we deal with, that we're familiar with. Above this, it's negative space-time. Again, the rules change completely. David Bohm was a protege of Albert Einstein, and he passed, four or five or six years ago, but he was considered the foremost authority on quantum physics. And he talked about an implicit and an explicit order. And he used the way he explained it is, if you have a cylinder of glycerin. Glycerin is a clear, viscous fluid. And so this cylinder has a crank where you can turn it. And if you put a couple drops of ink in it, a little blob of ink, and you turn the crank, what happens is the glycerin moves and it starts to string that ink out. And you keep turning it until the ink just disappears into the glycerin. It's been so spread out, it just totally disappears. You can't see it. But if you reverse the turn and you start to crank it the other way, the ink will reconstitute itself and it'll move back into the original dot. And so what he says is, when it's vanished, that is the implicit or the inner order. Or esoteric, hidden, can't see it. But when it manifests again as the dot, that is the explicit order. So Bohm talks about implicit order, explicit order. Negative space-time. Above here, this moves, where entropy breaks down here, this moves towards order. This is the organizing factor. And again, you look at a baby or a seedling or something like that, and when the life force comes in, it starts organizing. I mean, a seed takes dirt, air, and sunlight and builds a peach tree. So these are the laws that are governing that, on an energetic level. As I really worked on this and let this sink in and explored it a little bit more, you can really kind of apply some cool scriptural things to this. Prodigal son. Left the father's home, journeyed into the far country.
Oh.
So anyway.
If I could interrupt for a minute. Recently it came into my possession a tachyon pendant. And you mentioned tachyon. Are you familiar with that
technology? I am. Yeah.
It worked pretty good?
I haven't used it directly. I know a couple doctors that have used it and promoted it. So, yeah, it makes sense that it organizes the subtle energy fields around the body. There are also, I have a friend in Colorado that there's technology now that will measure this etheric field, which we're going to get into. But keep in mind, that is the organizing principle.
Are you also familiar with biogeometry and the works of, he's an Egyptian architect, I forget his name.
I'm thinking of some Hassan something, but I don't know if it's the same person. So, yes.
Okay. I started my training at a nursing home. Mm-hmm. This lady, we waved her, she was passing, and so we waved her before she passed, and we waved her after she passed, and she weighed 11 pounds less. Somebody said, one of the nurses said they saw her spirit go.
I've heard there's a subtle difference. I've heard of experiments like that where there was a subtle, very subtle difference.
Don't
the bowels
alter really?
But this one, well, she lost a lot of fluid too. So maybe the fluid was part of it.
Yeah, there would be physical changes, but I've heard of experiments like that where they do measure that. Soul isolating, and there's a very subtle, slight difference. So, yeah, I think there's something to that. There's a physicist by the name of Adam Trombley. If any of you have watched Thrive, he's one of the people on that movie. And if you haven't watched that movie, it's a must. But Trombley says that when something from this point to this point, by the time you see the physical manifestation of the condensation of this energy represents about 1/4 of the energy that's available. So if you think 100 million suns times 100 million years, and then you look at your body, you, this physical manifestation, is one representing 1/4 of the energy that's available here, which is pretty incredible. So, man was created in the image and likeness of God. Now, some people go, oh, I got 2 arms, 2 legs, and a head. God must have 2 arms, 2 legs, and a head. Maybe. But are you this or are you this? Scriptures say God is spirit and truth. Is there a difference between is and has? Yeah, God has a body. Yeah, so that's not what he is. Yes?
Jesus, when God became flesh, he was flesh, just like us. Mm-hmm. And so, his name is Jesus.
Great. So in the beginning was the Word. Yeah. That would be another description for this energy. The Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. So maybe just 1/4 of the energy available. But, you know, can't nitpick stuff like that. But just kind of getting the overall idea that what is manifesting here is a little teeny tiny bit of the power and the energy that's available up here. And so there's another little addition to this. I had a chance to work with a guy when I lived up in Montana. I had a friend up there who's a physics professor at the university, and he's one of the top people in the country into holography. And he had a lab at the university where he would make holograms. And he had this really cool picture of his daughter framed, and it was gorgeous. But you could walk to the side of this picture, and you could see her back. And so the way a hologram is made is you have a laser, and so a laser beam is coherent light. It's another thing. Light is condensing. Some people have referred to matter as frozen light. But a laser beam is coherent light vibrating at the same rate. A laser beam goes and it hits an instrument called a beam splitter, and that coherent light will split in half. So one half of it goes to what's called a reference beam. It just bounces off a mirror. It goes through a diffusing lens, and then that light hits a photographic plate. And so when that light hits this photographic plate, it makes like little ripples on it. So the other is called the object beam. It's deflected. It bounces off a mirror. It goes through a diffusing lens, and then it hits the object being photographed. And we'll say in this case it's an apple. So that light hits the apple, and it bounces off the apple, and those ripples go on this photographic plate. So what you have are called interference patterns. And if you had a still pond and you threw a rock over there and a rock over there, as the waves came together, they would create interference patterns. So when you make a holographic plate, you don't see the picture of the apple on it. You just see these faint swirls. But when you shine a light through that plate,
at a specific angle.
Okay, right, certain angle, the picture of the apple shows up three-dimensionally suspended in space. And you can walk around it and look at it at different sides. Now, what's interesting about this is if you cut that photographic plate in half and shine the light in it again, what do you get?
Two apples.
One apple.
No, you get two apples on each plate.
No, you get one apple.
I'm just shining it through one plate.
So
I'm getting the whole apple. And if I cut the plate in half, what do I get?
One full apple.
The whole apple. And if I cut off a little corner and shine the light through it, what do I get?
One full apple.
I get the whole apple.
But then you don't get all of the angles you would normally get with the full plate.
And not that it's smaller, you get the same size of apple. But it is less has less
definition.
Yeah.
but the point, and the really cool thing about this is all the information, the whole, is contained in every part.
So it's fractal.
So the principles of holography. There's a really cool book called Holographic Universe, and when you think in terms of the whole is contained in every part of the universe. It takes a while to digest this, but the meaning is really powerful. So
it's like the whole of our body is contained in every cell.
Cell, yeah, exactly. David Bohm, some of the other physicists, another gentleman, Carl Prebram, who's a brain scientist, who also kind of postulated that the brain stores energy holographically. That's how this is organized, holographically up here. But when you start thinking in terms of consciousness, some of you are familiar with remote viewing, that term. So Stanford University has studied that for years. They started in the 70s. Basically, remote viewing is the ability to project one's consciousness to another location and see, comprehend what's there. Military did that a lot. And they had instances where they found Soviet bases that were, they didn't even know exist. And after the wall came down in the Cold War, sort of melted, there was a guy who connected with this KGB officer, and they were comparing notes, and they were, he was showing him, here's what we found with remote viewing, and this other guy was verifying it. Yeah, that's what we had there. Another person by the name of Ingo Swann, I talk about him in my book a little bit. He was working with a Stanford Research Institute, and they were doing space exploration via remote viewing. And so before they sent I think it was the Voyager that went by Jupiter, I don't know, like I said, it was in the 80s, very remote viewing of Jupiter described what he saw. And when he described it, some of the scientists said, "Nah, that's not there. That's no way. That can't be." But when the probe went by and sent back the information, they corroborated what he said. So maybe you're sending your consciousness into outer space, or maybe you're just tapping into the universal hologram. Don't have an explanation for that. But again, the way it is all put together, and we're a little piece of this hologram. And so, and our job is to show up as that little piece to the highest and best we can.
So that means we, being reflections of the one God,
actually
have all of God in us.
You have all the characteristics. I mean, made in the image and likeness. You have this power, these qualities, these characteristics. And here we are on the physical plane trying to manifest and trying to live like that. So, going to move to the etheric field a little bit, because that is very applicable, and people that work in energy, do energy work, that's one of the areas that they work in quite a bit. But back in the 40s, there was a gentleman named Harold Berg, who was a professor at Yale University. And he did a lot of experimenting with the electromagnetic field around plants and animals. And when he was working with salamanders, what he noticed is there was a north-south positive-negative pole on the animal. And then there was an energy field that was around the animal that he could measure. But he was wondering, okay, how early in the development of the animal does this north-south, this positive-negative polarity come into being? So he traced it all the way back to the unfertilized egg. Unfertilized egg of a salamander has a positive and negative pole. But then as he observed the animal grow, what he noticed was that the energy field preceded the growth of the animal. And the energy field actually, his conclusion was the energy field was actually the template that guided the physical in its organization. When he did work with seeds, a lot of times he wouldn't just have the energy field of the seed, he'd have the miniature plant. That's how the energy field would show up. So that is the organizing principle. Again, entropy down here, it breaks apart, but that etheric body that we all have, that is the organizing principle, and that's what brings everything together. So if you have damage done in your etheric field, it's going to show up in your physical body. And if you try to heal it physically, guess what? It's not going to work because the damage is happening at a different level. Probably most of you are familiar with Curlian photography. You know, it's a way to take pictures of this energy field. And one of the things that they've done in experiments, there are these beautiful photographs of leaves just radiating this energy out. It's really cool to see this. But if they would cut part of the leaf away, what did they get? They still got the whole leaf. They take a picture of it. The energy field was there. So if you had a body part removed, the physical part's gone. But guess what? The etheric is still there. The imprint is still there. And that can be worked with. So, also, phantom limb phenomena. People that were in war had a leg blown off or an accident.
No, the phantom.
Phantom limb. Had a limb amputated. Gosh, I haven't had a leg for 3 years. And I have this horrible itch in my foot. How does that work? So there are, again, means of transmission that aren't just through the neurological system. It's like there's this whole energy template that is holding this together. And so it's also been referred to as the vital body. The more that we can strengthen that, whole, live food, good water, sunlight, those are things that will really strengthen that etheric or vital body. And that's going to have a very strong effect on the physical body.
Yeah, I just thought about this thermography, which is used now for detection of breast cancer. It looks like stuff in the body where there's heat. Is that the theory body you're looking at? I'm not quite sure.
I don't know.
I'd still probably be picking up something in the physical.
It's below the speed of light.
It's normal.
It's below the speed of light.
Thank you.
What's
that?
It's below the speed of light. So it is.
It's only physical, yeah.
Didn't your walk-on say something about that science would come to the point of being able to see and deal with the AC-35?
Yeah.